I'm Alex Michelson. Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. This week, a one-on-one conversation with Adam Schiff, the congressman from Burbank, Democrat, who found himself in the middle of history this week. He is the lead House impeachment manager. He was the one charged with making the case. He convinced exactly one Republican, Mitt Romney, to vote to convict the president. They lost the case overall because the president was acquitted. We talked to him about the whole experience. We talked to him about how surprised he was when Mitt Romney made that decision. We talked about what comes next in this fight, John Bolton and the fight over subpoenas, how tired he is, what he does to relax. We got into a lot of stuff with the congressman. This is the full unedited interview. It includes a lot of extra material we weren't able to fit into the TV version because of time. So here is Congressman Adam Schiff.
Congressman, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Congressman, history is often written by the winners. How do you think history will write the story of the impeachment trial of Donald Trump?
Well, I said as much during the trial, history will not be kind to this president because whenever we've turned our back on the values of this country, we've regretted it. And I think those that stick by this president, knowing that he lacks character, knowing he is without moral compass, and in the case of the Ukraine scandal, he sacrificed our national security for personal political favors. History will be very unkind to him and will be unkind to those that stood with him and refused to do their constitutional duty. I think Mitt Romney, however, will have a cherished place in history as someone that had the moral courage to stand up and do what's right. And I would say also certain Democratic senators who showed great courage, like Joe Manchin and Doug Jones, among others. So there are some profiles in courage here that history will be kind to, but the decision by senators not to have a real trial or a fair trial, not to allow witnesses and evidence, and then to say, nonetheless, the House proved its case, but we refuse to convict, will not reflect well on them.
But you mentioned Mitt Romney. When Mitt Romney gave that speech, what went through your mind having made that case, and were you surprised?
I was surprised, and what went through my mind is, you know, I had said in the preceding week, or I guess it was actually only a couple days earlier, in my close, is there a single one among you who will be the David that stood up to Goliath? Because even a single person of courage can change history. I didn't know whether there would be such a person. It turns out that person was Mitt Romney, and that this was the nominee, Republican nominee for president in the last cycle before Donald Trump, that he would have the courage to do it, be the first in history to vote to convict and remove a president of their own party, was an extraordinary act of, I think, of faith and courage. And what's more to me, I talked about at the end of the trial how the founders presumed that we would have sufficient virtue for self-governance. And I think that's exactly what Mitt Romney showed, and it gives me a lot of optimism coming out of this trial.
President Trump doesn't like what Mitt Romney did, and he doesn't like you very much either. Here's what President Trump said about you this week.
Adam Schiff is a vicious, horrible person.
So he described you in the two words as vicious and horrible. What are two words you would use to describe President Trump?
Well, I don't know. But I will say this, you know, it's his habit, and there must be a pathology to it, to project onto others his own lack of morality. And I think that's what you see here when he attacks others for being mean or vicious. That's his characteristic. And, you know, and it really drags the presidency down. I think it pulls the country down. We've never had someone so debase their office by engaging in these kind of personal attacks and rhetoric. But he only diminishes himself. And for me, it's, you know, nothing new. I'm used to his taunts. They've been going on for over 3 years now.
So what are your two words for President Trump?
Well, I don't know that I have two words, but I would say start acting like a president. Put the country first, you know, but at the same time, he is who he is. And I think we have seen enough to know that's just not his character. He doesn't have the kind of character we want in a president of the United States. You never really know how important character is in the highest office in the land until you have someone without it. And now we're seeing that in spades.
There have been reports that your office, there was some suspicious white powder there. Been a lot of reports about death threats against you in the preceding days. Are you concerned about your safety? Are you concerned about the safety of your family?
We have safety concerns, and we're doing our best to address them. It's a function of a couple things. It's a function of these presidential attacks. He tells foreign leaders on TV that, well, back in your country, they used to have a way of dealing with people like Adam Schiff. I mean, they're thinly veiled and sometimes not so thinly veiled threats, and they reach people, some who are not well, and that's a concern. But at the end of the day, I'm just going to do my job. I'm going to keep my head down and do my duty and not let this president deter me in any way. My family feels much the same way. My wonderful staff feels the same way. So we are braving the storm.
You believe that President Trump should be removed from office today. But after this trial, he's been acquitted. He's admitted no wrongdoing. His fundraising is up. His poll numbers are up. Is it possible that impeachment actually made it more likely that he will not only be president for the rest of this year, but for the next 4 years?
I don't think so. But frankly, the political calculus of whether impeachment would help or hurt in 2020 never was a question for me. It's not something that I was preoccupied with or really thought I should even try to answer. We had a constitutional duty to do. The president committed high crimes and misdemeanors. Even Republican senators that couldn't bring themselves to show the kind of courage Mitt Romney did acknowledged that we had proved him guilty. So we did our constitutional duty. And I do think that we performed an important task in holding this president accountable to the degree that we can without a majority in the Senate. And more than that, sending a message to future presidents that this kind of conduct won't be tolerated. It is impeachable. We will impeach presidents who abuse their power in this way. And I think we expose the president's scheme to the American people so that both the public and the Congress can be vigilant as we go forward to the election. We can be vigilant for other efforts by this president to try to cheat, just as he did by trying to withhold money from Ukraine to coerce it to interfere in our election. So all of those things, I think, are important. But at the end of the day, the greatest importance will attach to people at the polling places rejecting this kind of dangerous president who puts his own personal interest above the interest of the country.
So if he gets reelected after all this, this was all worth it?
Well, I think whether he gets reelected or not will depend on the strength of the Democratic candidate for president and our ability to turn out voters. If the Democrats turn out voters, then he is relegated to the dustbin of history. It's within our power because there are a substantially greater number of Americans who disapprove of this president than approve of him if they turn out and vote. And I think they will turn out and turn out in numbers we have never seen.
One of the only Republicans that maybe was really actually listening to your case was Susan Collins, somebody you were potentially trying to win over. She's the moderate Republican senator from Maine. She said you made your case, but, and then she said this to CBS News, something she tried to walk back with Fox News. Take a look.
I believe that the president has learned from this case.
The president says he did nothing wrong. Why do you think he learned something?
He was impeached.
So why do you have that feeling that he has changed, that he learned a lesson?
Well, I may not be correct on that. It's more aspirational on my part.
What's the lesson you think President Trump took away from this? And do you think he's even more emboldened to do this again?
Well, I don't know what lesson he took away from it, except aggrievement. That is his modus operandi. In the meandering press conference or whatever it was he held yesterday, he complained incessantly about how unfair the world is to Donald Trump, this man that was born rich and is now the president of the United States, but nonetheless feels like he's the world's biggest victim. I would only say in terms of Susan Collins, none of us who have watched the president over the last 3 years could have any reason to believe that he would be repentant, that he would acknowledge his own wrongdoing, that he would learn from this. He is who he is. Nothing matters to him except himself. And this is why he's dangerous. He believes that anyone who stands up to him is a traitor or treasonous because he thinks he is the state. And that isn't going to change. So we're going to have to be vigilant in Congress. We're going to have to do everything we can to defend the institutions of our democracy as long as we're forced to suffer his presence in the Oval Office and the threat that poses. But we can't be naive about this and expect that somehow he's going to walk away from this experience chastened the way Bill Clinton did. Rather, if anything, this president always doubles down on his wrongdoing.
But what does that mean? You got to be vigilant in Congress. You just tried to impeach him and you lost. And so if he does this again, which he says there's nothing wrong with doing it again, what happens to him?
Well, we have to do our best to prevent him from inviting foreign interference in our election, prevent him from seeking to corrupt those elections with foreign help.
So how do you do that?
And there are ways that, well, we do that by watching vigilantly the intelligence about what foreign nations are doing, exposing what foreign nations are doing, exposing what the president is doing, and calling upon the American people to reject it. That's all that we can do. The senators who found him guilty but nonetheless voted to acquit, I don't think lived up to their oath to be impartial jurors, but that doesn't relieve us of our obligation to do everything within our power to defend our democracy when it's at great risk. That's an obligation I think we as public servants have. It's an obligation the public has. And what members of the public can do is they can reject any party, any candidate that would willfully make use of foreign interference like this president did in 2016 when he touted all these Russian hacked emails like he is trying to do now by coercing another nation to get involved, their nations. But they can do their patriotic duty more than anything else in by getting out to vote and rejecting a person of such ill character in the Oval Office.
Republicans in the Senate criticized you for not issuing a subpoena to John Bolton, the president's former national security advisor. You have made the point that that probably would have resulted in years of potential litigation. Bolton has now said that he was willing to testify before the Senate if he was subpoenaed. Are you going to now issue a subpoena to John Bolton to come testify in front of the House?
Well, first of all, you know, people should recognize the duplicity of the argument that the president's lawyers were making about John Bolton and other witnesses. On the one hand, they were arguing to the senators, the House managers should have compelled Bolton to testify in the House, even while they were opposing his testimony in the House, and even while they were in court, arguing in court that the House cannot use the courts to enforce its subpoenas. So the president's lawyers were arguing out of both sides of their mouth, saying to the House, you got to fight us in court, and saying in the Senate, and in the court, they can't do that. So that was a very duplicitous argument. But in terms of the future, when the Senate voted not to hear relevant witnesses like John Bolton, we went back to John Bolton and said, if you're willing to testify, submit to us an affidavit under oath about the events here. The Senate won't let you testify. You can still be heard. And he refused. Apparently, he wants to save it for his book, and he'll have to answer to why it was more important for him to save it for the book than it was to tell the American people during the trial. But those facts are going to come out, Alex, and more as additional documents are obtained through litigation. And those senators that voted to put their hands over their ears and cover their head are going to have to answer, why didn't you want to know this? Why didn't you want to see these incriminating documents? Why didn't you want to hear this testimony when it might have made a difference? And what's more, if your argument is let the voters decide, why did you vote against letting the voters hear what people like John Bolton and others had to say?
So are you going to buy John Bolton's book?
Well, I will probably read the coverage of it. I don't know that I want to contribute to whatever income he earns off that book, given that he was unwilling to testify before the House and unwilling to submit an affidavit during the trial.
Let's talk for a moment about the State of the Union. You were there this week for that historic moment as well. Of course, the moment that got a lot of attention was President Trump not shaking the hand of Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, and then the Speaker of the House literally ripping up his speech afterwards. Were the actions of either of them in that situation helpful to your goal of actually getting something done for the American people?
Well, look, we have worked hard to try to get things done. We have, in fact, passed hundreds of bills, some of them very significant, that have sat in the Senate. Mitch McConnell refuses to take them up. The difficulty in getting things done in the Congress has little to do with how much comity or lack of comity there was during the State of the Union, but rather the fact that Mitch McConnell, at the president's behest, will not and refuses to take up any number of important bills to protect people's health care, to make sure people are earning a decent living, that they can have a secure retirement. That has been the problem more than anything else, more than whether the president made the State of the Union a campaign rally, which is exactly what he did with Republican members chanting 4 more years. We've never had such an appalling display or that abuse of the Presidential Medal of Honor to be provided to this right-wing talk show host during the State of the Union. It was really a travesty, so I can well understand how the speaker was feeling about that. But at the end of the day, the difficulty, Alex, is the fact that the Senate, under Mitch McConnell, refuses to take up legislation, not that we haven't moved forward with it.
I mean, it's knowing you a little bit, it's hard to imagine you ever making that decision, though, to rip up the speech publicly. Is it fair to say that's not your style?
Well, look, I am completely sympathetic to what the speaker did. And I was aghast, as I know she was, at, you know, not just the charade that he was putting on before the House, but how, you know, on every page of that address, there was falsehood after falsehood after falsehood. The president saying that he was fighting hard to protect people with pre-existing conditions, while he is literally in court fighting to repeal the provision that protects people with pre-existing conditions, claiming that he was cracking down on big pharmaceutical companies when, in fact, he was getting in the way of legislation to try to lower drug prices. So time after time after time, in ways large and small, I don't think we've ever had a dress so riddled with falsehood. And I can well understand the speaker's frustration with that on behalf of all of us in the House, as well as the kind of spectacle that he was making.
So what, if anything, can we realistically actually expect to get done between now and November? Is there anything?
We have to get things done. And, you know, we showed even through the midst of the impeachment and the trial that we could get a trade deal done, that we could get other things done. And there are certain areas there ought to be broad common ground, like rebuilding our crumbling roads and infrastructure, broadband and a energy, renewable energy, superhighway, and other things that should enjoy broad support. I don't think we can put that on hiatus until after the election. I'm certainly going to be doing everything I can. I'm very proud that this week, a bill that I've worked now for about 18 years on, the Rim of the Valley Corridor Act, to more than double the size of the Santa Monica Mountains Recreation Area, is going to be taken up next week. I'm really proud that through the midst of it, we got the Armenian Genocide Resolution passed. So even through these difficult times, we can get good things done, and I'm going to devote myself to making sure that we do.
And nice to talk about local issues for a second as well. So just a question about you, though. You know, for a lot of our viewers can relate to, like, they have a big presentation at work, they're nervous, or they have to give a big speech. You know, some people can relate to being an athlete and being nervous before a game. What was it like for you as a man, as a citizen, as a lawyer, as a congressman, to go through this process, to be in front of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, to be the lead guy? What was this whole thing like for you?
Well, you know, I certainly felt a great weight of history on my shoulders. I think all of us that were managers felt that way. The first time we walked onto the Senate floor carrying these articles of impeachment, something that's only happened two other times in the history of the country, you feel, you know, a great sense of the moment. But, you know, it's like many other things. Once you're in that moment, once you begin your task, you start to forget about the fact that, you know, millions of people are watching around the country, or the significance of every argument that you make, and you just do your very best. And I'm really proud of the case that we put on. I think we put on the strongest possible case. I think we proved our case. But all of us, you know, felt the immensity of the experience and what it meant for the country going forward. And we did so, I think, full in the knowledge that we would be treated well by history for standing up for the values that have always been at the heart of what America means.
Do you get any sort of break now? I mean, you've been going nonstop forever, it seems like. And if you do get a break, what do? You like binge watch The Bachelor? Do you play sports? Like, what is a break look like for you?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you asked that question. It has been quite grueling, and you know, the past couple of months more so than at any other time in my career in Congress. So I am looking forward to a break, a breather. There have been other times, though, I have to say, the last 3 years where I've thought, okay, now certainly I can get a breather, and it never seems to come. And given that this president is a habitual offender, I'm not sure how much longer of a break I'll get. But when I do get the opportunity, I love to go to the gym. I love to run. I like to go to the movies and dinner with my wife. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed after the trial sleeping in and not setting the alarm for the first time. That was just heaven. You tend to appreciate the little things when you're sensory deprived. But my favorite thing is still dinner and movie.
Our thanks to Congressman Adam Schiff talking to us from Washington this week. We encourage you to check out another podcast we put out this week talking about the Oscars and the entertainment business with Gray Drake of Movie Phone and Elizabeth Wagmeister of Variety. Next week, a special show, the Schwarzenegger Institute doing a whole event about homelessness in California. We're expecting to talk with the former governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the housing secretary, Ben Carson, plus a whole lot of officials from around the state. It should be really something special next week. Thank you for listening this week. We hope you subscribe to the podcast, like us, tell people about us, tell people about our show. For more information on the show itself, go to theissueisshow.com. You can follow me in social media at Alex Michelson. And we love, love, love hearing your feedback. Thanks for listening. I'm Alex Michelson. Talk to you next week.